Hello, everybody. Matt here, just giving you a quick warning. This podcast contains spoilers of all of the Marvel movies, pretty much, except Spider-Man, most of the DC films, and heavy spoilers on The Mummy. So if you're afraid of those, and by The Mummy I mean the Tom Cruise one, not the Brendan Fraser one, but I digress. If you are potentially going to watch those films, maybe don't listen to this podcast. But if you have, enjoy. Oh my god, it's a Tom and Matt Attack bonus content on films! There we go. We're talking about films because
Let's talk about films. You've seen The Mummy.
I have seen The Mummy.
And I was talking about my experience watching Wonder Woman.
Yes.
And saying it was a nice self-contained experience.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't, like a lot of these superhero movies, lots and lots of references to the other movies that are either preceded it or coming later. There is a little bit in Wonder Woman at the beginning where Wonder Woman gets a package from Bruce Wayne.
Okay.
And it stirs some old memories, and that's when the movie plays out. Wonder Woman's remembering what happened at the end. She kind of writes an email back to Bruce Wayne and says, okay. Cheers for that.
Really?
So that's...
Is she tech savvy, or is she like an old lady emailing? Does she put on her glasses?
She's very tech savvy. Yeah.
Okay.
She is. And yeah, that's... There was the even after credits scene that I noticed because we left after the initial first part of the credits,
yes.
You know, the colourful bit of the credits.
Yeah, before it goes to just like
and then
text.
You think, well, yeah, between that and just the text, there's usually something, but there isn't with Wonder Woman. That sort of also strengthens its like emphasis on just being one story and it being told very well.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Mm. Like, for me, that has been a constant problem with film for the last, God, 3-4 years, is that everything wants to be a cinematic universe, and I'm really tired of it. Yeah. There's, obviously, Marvel did it very well to begin with, I think, of the way those first films like Thor and Iron Man mm-hmm. and stuff tied into the idea of the Avengers.
Mm. All building up to that yeah. first Avengers movie, which was all, you know, all that build up was important to that movie.
Yes.
Since then, I don't think it's as important.
No, I don't think so either.
And we've kind of had that gimmick now. And.
But I mean, yeah. You know, Iron Man was clearly just meant to be a good Iron Man movie.
Mm, yeah.
And I think, for better or worse, Captain America was meant to be that film. And Thor was meant to be the film that Thor ended up being.
Yeah.
And they weren't all trying to go, oh, use a little thing here that's going to blow up and be like a Horcrux in a Harry Potter book.
Yeah.
It was small self-contained stories that did things very well. And then after the credits, they were like, cool, we're building something here. Yeah. We're going to do some amazing things.
Guardians of the Galaxy, again, was a good self-contained.
I think Guardians of the Galaxy felt very fresh, though, because Guardians yeah. came out in the wake of the second Avengers film, and everything was so overly complex. I was sat in the cinema.
Wasn't as good as the first one.
No, because they were trying too hard. They were expecting you to have seen 7 hours of additional films and
they've
TV.
Already done it. They've already gathered all those characters together, and you've had that initial like, woo, 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 look, they're all interacting with each other.
Yeah.
And after experiencing that, it delivers it again.
Yeah.
And it's like, you don't care anymore because you've already had that thrill.
Exactly.
And it's never going to feel like it did in the first Avengers film.
But honestly, like I saw that with one of my neighbours who had not seen all of the rest of the Marvel films. Like I think she'd seen the first Avengers movie.
Yeah.
And I think maybe she said she'd seen Thor 2.
Oh dear.
Yeah, exactly. Which is why she'd not really seen any of the others. But it meant that I was there trying to explain to her why certain plot elements were the way they were and why, like, they were mutants clearly in it that she'd seen in the X-Men films a couple of weeks before that weren't actually in the same universe. Yeah.
Quicksilver.
Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch. Yeah. And it was all very confusing. And like there was another friend of ours, Marta, not my fiancée, who was just like, I have not seen any of these films. I have no idea what's going on. And she left because she was so confused by the entire film because it required you to understand why S.H.I.E.L.D. was corrupt and why Fury was doing what he was doing and why they were all very sad at the death of that agent guy who was in like 5 seconds of Iron Man because he was actually in that entire S.H.I.E.L.D. TV series.
Yeah, yeah. Even the first Avengers does require you to have some prior knowledge.
Yeah, but I mean, not so much.
Because Agent Coulson dies in that first Avengers, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
There's like there's winks and nods, though, in that first Avengers. And I think that's what superhero films, and generally sci-fi films that are tied to some bigger universe, had done very well throughout the years. Mm. You know, like, it's not a good film by any stretch of the imagination, but like Jason and the Argonauts, Clash of the Titans movie.
Not seen either of them, actually.
The first one's very interesting. The second one, they're all like, yeah, we're going to gear up and go to war. It's
Wrath
terrible.
Of the Titans.
No, no, Clash of the Titans. The first Clash of the Titans. Not. I'm not talking about... I'm referring to the Ray Harryhausen.
Oh, right, okay. I Clash thought you were talking to about the new ones.
Versus the new Clash of the Titans.
Clash and Wrath were the new two ones, yeah.
But the first remake of Clash of the Titans before Wrath of the Titans.
Okay, that one.
There's a scene in it where they're all like, yeah, man, we're going to go to war. We're going to beat these Titans, da 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 da. And they start pulling out like swords and stuff. And then the mechanical owl from the Ray Harryhausen movie is there. They'll be like, oh, we're not going to need that.
Oh.
It's just like a little like throwaway, like, oh, no, fuck that.
Like Force Awakens, I guess, had a couple of those bits with the training orb in the Millennium Falcon.
And I mean, that's what that whole collector's scene in Guardians of the Galaxy was them going, hey, here's a Howard the Duck reference, here's like an obscure, like deep cut Marvel space dog.
So those stuff are okay because they're not integral to the plot.
No, that's just something that's snuck in the background. But I think more and more the idea of the Easter egg as like almost like a trailer in itself of, wow, this is going to build up this next epic in the cinematic universe. Yeah. The way the Batman and Superman had the whole, like, cool, I've got creepy stalker CCTV, here's 5 minutes of Wonder Woman, five minutes of Flash.
That was so forced, wasn't it? And horrible.
Yeah, it's grim.
Horrid, actually.
Yeah.
Disgusting, I would say.
I wouldn't go that far. It's just, it felt overly indulgent.
It felt very out of place.
It did.
In the flow of the film, and only serving a purpose to sell the next movie.
Yeah.
Or to kind of quickly explain everything that needed its own build-up, really.
Yeah.
It's in each one of those characters needed its own thing.
Well, I mean...
Like
in all...
Cyborg and Flash.
Yeah.
They need a little bit more than just that quick scene.
Yes.
Because they rushed it so much to just do that little scene. It's just
because they want to get into it, man. They got a Justice League movie they need to make. They're going to get right into it.
Yeah.
I mean, that, to be honest with you, like, I could have done with a movie that was just a Batman movie and then had Batman versus Superman, because you could have cut half of that bloody movie that didn't make sense away and all the exposition, and maybe the whole my mother's name's Martha as well, oh God, thing would have made a bit more sense if you had a movie to kind of prime for this reveal.
It's all been rather rushed, hasn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, I can understand why. I mean, they had the Nolan universe, and that was there, and that was its own thing, and people really loved it, and for better or worse, Dark Knight Rises is the film it is.
Yeah.
But I don't think you need to rush into these things.
No.
I understand why, from a brand point of view, but...
What's amazing with Wonder Woman is its pacing is fantastic. It gives you a chance to care about these new characters that are only self-contained in this movie. Really, you find out the origins of Wonder Woman. You spend quite a lot of time with her as she grows up and she trains to be this warrior, this Amazon. But there's obviously more to it than that with the character. And
do you think she delivers as an Amazon?
Well, she's not an Amazon, is she?
Oh.
You see, she's special.
I was just making a website joke.
Oh, she delivers as an Amazon. Yes.
Come on, Parry.
If this film... There's got to be a joke further down the line now when Wonder Woman appears again.
Yeah.
The Amazon joke's got to...
I don't think it's Michael Bay's Transformers, fortunately.
They play up to this thing that she doesn't know about the world outside of the island where she's grown up. So when she leaves the island to fight the in the war against the Germans in World War One,
Flash delivering her an Amazon package is clearly a thing that needs to happen.
Then all these things are new to her, and it's all very well done. And as I say, the pacing of this film is fantastic. Gives the film a chance to breathe and has some very tender emotional moments where not a lot happens. It's just like, it's just visual, you know. The sort of romance between her and Chris Pine's character. It's very subtly done. And there's a lot of respect for all the characters in this film. You know what? You should really see it because it's just a very good, solid, classic film. You know what I mean? Yeah. In that classic way they make superhero films and the classic filmmaking thing. You're just going to tell one story. You're going to have the origin of the character and have some sort of, you know, arc. And then, you know, it's got romance, action, emotion, sacrifice, love, evil.
I've been quite gun-shy about it, to be honest. Like, I've heard nothing but good things.
Mm. Because it doesn't overcomplicate things.
No.
It just does what a classic movie should do, you know.
And I think this
leaves you content at the end.
Like, I wasn't too keen on the Superman movie.
Oh, no.
I know you despise that film, so I'm not going to open up this bucket of worms.
I'll just say, for people who don't know, my feelings on Man of Steel, that I watched it once, didn't like it. I tried watching it again, couldn't finish it. And it's very rare that I actually never finish films because I'm very dedicated to finishing a film, even if it's a bad one.
Even if you fall asleep for 10, 15 minutes of it.
I tried to give this another chance. I saw it at the cinema, Man of Steel, and I could not finish it when I tried to watch it again because it's just so dumb, it's ridiculous.
There are bits of that movie that I dislike very heavily. I would not go so far to say as I couldn't watch it again. I probably could. For me, the one thing that sticks with me is that entire movie is the way they have that fight scene, and I've told you this before, but obviously not on a podcast. Mm-hmm. The fight scene between him and the woman.
Oh yeah, you like that bit. I remember you telling
me. Fucking how superhero fight scenes should be done. It is perfect. Yeah. Like Zack Snyder taking this idea of superhumans, and the man can make a fight scene like, you know, 300 and everything else evidence of that.
But
that is the best, honestly, that is the best action fight scene I have ever seen. That is the way when I read comic books as a kid, I saw superheroes moving. It's almost like Dragon Ball. They moved so fast that they kind of like flicker in of time because you can't comprehend the speed they're moving at.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it makes it very watchable. Something, again, I referenced it the second time, which is more than I probably should, the Transformers movies. Transformers fight. Nah. There's so much going on, and there's so much rolling, and they're so big that you can't comprehend them. But this, for me, was like a perfect fight scene. Like, honestly, I don't get why it hasn't been mimicked more in other films, and why he didn't do that then with Superman and Batman.
Mm.
It's a shame. I think, honestly, for me, that is the one redeeming thing of that film, but I think that film is so universally loved.
Storytelling is terrible in that film.
Anything good in it is just disregarded.
Character development, storytelling, and emotional weight within Man of Steel is very heavy-handedly done, and it's just non-existent in parts.
Yeah.
And it needs that.
Yeah.
Because of the heritage of Superman. For me, you know, being a big fan of the original Superman, you know, it doesn't really, this story doesn't do what it needs to do for the character.
No.
At all.
See, the interesting thing here is, right, like I was, before you came, looking into licensed video game related stuff, I was looking at a guy called Jeremy Parrish's review of Batman, because I was thinking of covering Sunsoft's Batman.
Oh, right, the video
and
game.
Batman. He was talking about how, Sunsoft's Batman for the Game Boy and NES.
But you're looking at a review of the film.
He was talking in this review of the video game about how this is based on the 1980s Tim Burton film.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying how like Burton plays fast and loose with the idea of Batman because Batman kills people in that film.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that being a big point of contention for the Superman movies that he ultimately, spoilers, I'm actually saving you time and money, he kills Zod at the end.
Yeah.
And he has to do it. It's a sacrifice. Like he clearly doesn't want to, but Zod's going to kill a lot of people if he doesn't.
Mm.
And there's this moral thing of like, oh God, you know, like Superman killed someone, like, oh God, the world's gone mad. Do you think that if Superman had killed people in that original film with
Christopher Reeves,
thank you. It would, well, I mean, tonally, I don't think that film really allows him to, because he's such a good guy.
Superman saves people in the original film, which is why this new Superman doesn't seem to care so much. You know, he's only concerned with his own battles and Lois Lane. So
up until that end,
at least that end bit, you know, people were up in arms about him killing, but he was trying to save people through his actions.
Yeah.
Wonder Woman's similar. She doesn't want to kill people, actually. If you watch Wonder Woman film, she doesn't actually outright kill anybody until she comes up to the point where she, you know, her quest has been to kill a particular character.
Yeah.
And she's no qualms about doing that because of the evil involved. Yeah. It's sort of like Zod and Superman. So, yeah, it doesn't bother me so much that Superman killing Zod stuff.
No.
But the thing is that Superman character doesn't do enough saving in that film. And the whole fight in the city, sort of, he isn't concerned with what's going around him.
No, he's smashing through a lot of buildings.
What would have helped in that scene was him stopping his own fight against Zod to save somebody.
Or to take it away from there, you know, and be aware
sacrificing
and acknowledge
himself, you know, for the other people. And he doesn't do that. And that's a bit of an error. Now, you could argue that that's because he's rookie Superman and he doesn't really know what he's doing, but that doesn't make sense because Superman, the character, is born out of a need to do good, you know?
I think there have been other takes, though. I think this is them trying to get close to the Nolan version.
I know it is, but
Superman.
Superman is like, should be like Wonder Woman is in the Wonder Woman film, you know? Yeah. She's a being of pure goodness.
Yeah.
And she can't see suffering, and she can't let suffering happen because she's got the power to stop it.
Yeah.
You know, and in that Superman film, Superman doesn't have that mindset.
No. And
well,
he does, but he doesn't.
Yeah. It's really frustrating because, yes, he does save the kids in the bus at the beginning, and yeah, but it doesn't work. You don't feel it. That's the problem. He may do things, but you don't feel like it's coming from the right place. Superman, that's a problem. It's the emotional side of things which is totally non-existent in Man of Steel.
Well, I mean, it's just there when it suits the purpose, right? Like, it's like, okay, we need to have an emotional moment now where his dad dies.
Yeah,
It's very switched on and switched off. And I mean, that has worked well in other Zack Snyder films. I mean, Watchmen is just play for play, pretty much the comic book.
It's all about his mom and his dad. It's not the bigger picture. And Superman is a character who looks at the bigger scale of the world. You know,
he is a more fleshed out character than that film gives him credit for. More than I would give him credit for. I'm not a particularly big Superman fan. I've never really been that big on the comic.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I get you. I understand.
Yeah. I can talk quite passionately about that because I really like the character. I like this idea of goodness and purity and innocence and... Yeah. Why are we fighting? Wonder Woman does it very well. Why are we fighting? Why are we doing all these wars? What are we doing to each other?
Yeah.
You know? And it handles that very well. And one of the reasons why I like it so much. And Superman should do that too, but it didn't. And therefore, it failed as a Superman film.
I mean, there are lots of discussions around why Suicide Squad is not a good film. Did you see Suicide Squad?
I saw Suicide Squad, yeah. It was okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't totally offended by Suicide Squad, actually, because it's a bit fun, really.
Yeah.
I lost interest near the end of it. But it had its moments.
I just don't think it's a very consistent story either.
No, it isn't. It's a very choppy, messy thing.
And if production rumours on the internet are to be believed, that is purely because it was two different films. They shot two different versions of that film and then tried to splice them together after the positive reaction in that trailer.
It doesn't try to be anything. It doesn't have so many lofty ambitions.
Suicide Squad. It should still be towards this Wonder Woman model for me, a self-contained
film. Why
can't
more films be like that? That is the real question. Because they should have some emotion. A film should make you feel differently after you've watched it. It should have some sort of emotional resonance with you if it's dealing with what these superhero films tend to deal with. Suicide Squad does deal with some emotional aspects. You know, Deadshot has, you know, a child, and there is some sort of morality.
Yeah, but it's the most ham-fisted morality you can get.
It's not done very well.
No. It's there, like, Deadshot only has a child, and this is my pure belief, because Will Smith is Will Smith.
Yeah.
And Will Smith was probably like, no, I can't be a killer. I need to have some, like, emotional hook that I'm doing it for family or something. And then it's just like, well, why cast Will Smith as Deadshot then?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, you can have that rambunctious, like, rip-roaring film. You can make Sucker Punch.
It's sort of like Superman. He only cares about those closest to him, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And that doesn't necessarily make for a very appealing character.
No. I mean, flawed, yes. Dark and gritty, but I know
but
that's
not what
you're about.
He doesn't have that sort of inner conflict about what he's doing at all. I don't know what to say. Suicide Squad was a bit of fun, but a bit naff at the same time.
Yeah.
Lost interest in it later on in the film. Didn't maintain my interest. The story isn't strong enough to... And is... Yeah. It's an average film with a few fun moments in it.
Do you feel the same way about Batman vs. Superman?
Yeah, Batman vs. Superman's better than Man of Steel. I can at least say that. But it sort of falls flat on its face at the end.
Yeah.
Where, you know, all these things that we mentioned, that scene where Wonder Woman's on the computer looking at that. Well, that's horrible. Let's forget about that for a second. But the core of that film is that those two don't like each other, they're having a fight. And the fact that their opinions turn so quickly in that, it just makes the whole thing redundant.
Yeah.
I totally
agree.
It just shoots itself in the foot.
It does, because...
Because Batman wants to kill Superman.
And Superman wants to kill Batman by that point.
Yeah, yeah. And it's resolved in such a heavy-handed way.
Yeah.
It's like, couldn't they come up with a better way to sort that out? Hatred for each other that they seem to have.
Surely it should have been not like Martha, that nonsense.
Yeah. There are better ways they could have handled that, and it just astounds me why that wasn't handled better.
I think they could have. I think that there's a world where that film happens, it builds up in the way it does, no matter how long that takes, the 2 hours or whatever it is, and it gets there, and they get to the point where they fight, they go do all the crazy punching through walls, and they battle in something. Yeah. But as you're saying with Man of Steel,
yeah.
Something happens there and then at that point where they kind of have to begrudgingly settle their differences for that little bit to go, okay, this is a problem we need to deal with right now. Me and you fucking hate each other.
Yeah, you know, we still hate each other, but we need to make that sacrifice for the greater good.
Yeah.
You know? And that's...
And you know, and then I can get the whole you and I don't see eye to eye.
They can't make up just as quick as it.
Yeah, but it seems like, and I mean,
because even say like, oh, we're friends, like as well. It's he's talking to Martha. He's rescuing Martha, isn't he? Batman.
Yeah.
And he says, "Yeah, we're mates," you know, or something like that. We're friends now. He's my mate.
Yeah, something super dumb like that.
Yeah, it's like.
Oh, I mean, you know, like. Show and Jump and me playing Yakuza Kenzen to bring this back to video games. There are a lot of moments in that where in traditional Japanese storytelling you will have this idea of there is a strong opponent, he will fight the hero, they will kind of bond through battle or whatever, and it's just this idea of respect, but like, you are still my enemy. I still very much dislike you. Your core of your beliefs are very different to my own. But we have met on a field of strength. And I guess that's perhaps what they were trying to avoid. But to make that story just about like the fact that the characters' mothers have the same name is just such a ridiculous
thing. You can't comprehend the logic of it. You're trying to think, actually, this doesn't make sense.
No.
You think to yourself as it's happening... No, this is not natural, and it's bad writing.
It is incredibly
and for everyone puts in a lot of good work in that film. I think but they're let down by the story and the writing. Totally.
So if you want to see a film that literally starts with the words "The Dark Universe."
Oh yes, The Mummy. Now we're on to your
I advise you to go see The Mummy. Because as much as we've talked about for the last 20 odd minutes this idea of making a cinematic universe, none have gone about it in such a ham-fisted way for me. Like, and this is saying something. This is after me bitching for 20 minutes about how Batman and Superman does it wrong.
Yeah.
And how Marvel did it in a really stupid way where you need to watch like 20 other films to get what's going on. It literally starts, and bear in mind, it should have started with Dracula Untold, which was a film that was released like a year and a half ago.
That and he brushed that one under the carpet, didn't
he? Forgot about because it wasn't very good. And like, even they have kind of like, they'd said at the time when the press release went out, it's like, we're making our Universal Monsters universe.
Yeah.
This is the first film. And then they were actually, no, it's not, because everyone hates it. So they brought in the big guns. They brought in the Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
I mean,
when all else fails, bring in Tom Cruise.
Cruise control, Tom Parry. Yeah.
He's dependable.
Needed. And I mean, Tom Cruise isn't bad in this film.
No, I never think he's bad.
He's Tom Cruise.
I think he's good on the whole.
I would say he's miscast in this film, though, because essentially what he needs to be is Nathan Drake, because this film is very much trying to be Uncharted.
Yeah.
Meets so because they've got
Brandon
Jones.
Fraser to do it instead.
I would say that original Mummy movie is a lot better than this one. And I mean, I honestly think that original Mummy movie is kind of an entertaining film. There's nothing really wrong with it in my eyes. It's been about 10 years since I've seen it, but it's such a weird thing, man, because they're clearly trying to make this universe, and they are clearly disregarding the idea of a standalone film in so many angles, right?
Yeah.
But it's this weird sense of smugness that I always see when everyone starts referencing like gothic horror and like Victorian literature, because there are so many moments towards the arse end of that film where at the start, it's kind of like, okay, this is weird. You're clearly trying to build something here.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of goes into an Indiana Jones movie for like 40 minutes. And okay, cool. This is actually, you know what? People have gone out of their way to say this film's horrible. Mm. I can't see what they're complaining about.
Uh-huh.
Other than Tom Cruise being miscast, other than him having an annoying sidekick for all of 5 minutes, and then he dies, and then they have this weird, like, you can see me as I'm a ghost because we're in a cryptic universe where you can't die. That's a spoiler, but in all fairness, you're not going to want to see this film anyway. So he sees this guy in the most cliched of way that every person sees their conscience manifest as a thing, and he's telling him what he's doing wrong. And the mummy is like an all-powerful like zombie woman, and she's made out to be a wrong'un. Because the first... I'm skipping the worst part of this.
Come on.
Right, so the first 10 minutes of this film are Russell Crowe in a really rubbish Victorian English accent, even though the film is set in the modern day, explaining to you the story of this mummy and how she came to be in like the most ham-fisted, this is us giving you the supposition of a Lord of the Rings movie, like the elves went to Middle Earth and then the father had a son. It's just this really thick, clunky narrative. It's literally the start, them trying to do the start of the Lord of the Rings, you know. It's even got a "but they were deceived" moment in it.
Okay.
And they're there and they're talking about this thing, and then they do this for 10 minutes and they explain the backstory of this mummy. And then it's just like, oh, Tom Cruise, lovable rogue, miscast completely because he's not this lovable rogue. He's too much of an everyman to be this, like, hey, look at me, I hit this thing. Oh, it didn't quite go where I wanted to, but it's okay. Because he's Tom Cruise, he's perfect, that's been established, that's what he is.
Yeah.
And so they then spend like half an hour going to this place and then going into this place where they shouldn't be, and them ordering a napalm strike because they're actually soldiers in the military, and then by doing that they uncover this ancient pharaoh tomb in Iraq, hundreds of miles away from Egypt.
Yeah.
And all of this stuff happens. He gets his mate killed, blah, blah, blah. The scene from the trailer, which put you over the top of them crashing in the the plane.
I've seen that, yeah.
Happens, and he dies, and he comes back to life. And then, through that, through, like, small series of flashbacks in him dying and him being brought back to life and stuff, it tells you all you need to know about this mummy woman and how evil she is.
Yeah.
And it does it so much more eloquently
than Russell Crowe's
stupid Victorian accent. And then it's just like, okay, so this doesn't need to be there. Like, this 15 minutes at the start is clearly... Yeah. Some fucking studio execs going, kids don't understand mummies. We need to tell them what a mummy is.
Let the story unfold gradually.
Yeah. My advice to you is, to, if you watch it on DVD, just completely just skip to the where
maybe
it says
when the
mummy
DVD
at the start.
Comes out, they'll have optional Russell Crowe introduction.
Oh, God.
You know, because sometimes they do this, if films have these introductions from the director usually, but...
So it does that, right?
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, cool. We understand why Tom Cruise as he is. And like, it kind of turns into a bit of a monster movie because she's literally sucking the life out of people. And they're turning into zombies. You have a bit of like fast walking zombie stuff in there, which is all really cool as well. Mm-hmm. And then, right, after all of this has happened and after it's built up to this and it gets there and you're like, okay, cool. They capture the mummy. Mm-hmm. And then there's a whole half an hour sequence where he meets Russell Crowe, and Russell Crowe is just like, oh, my name's Dr. Jekyll. And it does the whole camera pan, like, you know who that is, kids, right?
Gosh.
From the books, from the pictures. And it's just all, like... Him walking to meet Russell Crowe is him literally walking through a fucking laboratory where there are, like, trophies on the wall that are, like, the hand of the creature of the Black Lagoon, a skull with vampire fangs, a silver bullet.
Yeah.
And it's just like, yeah, we fucking get it. You're trying to make monster movies. Like, we understand the concept of monsters.
Yeah.
You've been making these films for literally over 100 fucking years. And then... So he has this moment where he builds up this idea that he's taking medicine, and you're like, oh God, he's clearly going to turn into Hyde. And then he turns into Hyde and has a battle with
Tom Cruise.
And does it even worse, like, he suddenly goes all Cockney. And he's like, hello, Governor. And
when
he turns into Hyde.
Yeah.
And he's got this awful... you know how the zombie creatures look in Planet Terror? Where their faces kind of got all puffy and their veins are kind of big and they've got the big bug eyes.
Yeah.
He goes like that. Mm. So it's clearly like they used all of their special effects budget on everything else, clearly on the laboratory entrance.
Okay. So now it's no longer about the mummy, it's about
Russell Crowe. It's about Russell Crowe and like this secret organization of mummy people who hunt monsters.
Monster hunters.
Yeah, and they're
Van Helsing.
Yeah, and they're not sure if Tom Cruise should be a part of it, and like Dr. Jekyll's really morally grey, and I'm completely spoiling the mummy, but I'll put some in at the start saying spoilers. Mm. He then is just like, oh no, we need to kill Tom Cruise, because Tom Cruise will be all powerful, and he could be the chosen one. And then, so they let this happen, and loads of double crossing and stuff happens. And then, like, the movie ends with them defeating the mummy, and then, like, it has this weird moment where it's just like, oh yeah, we need to go here now, to the next place, and does that end of Batman Begins Joker card, like, oh, we've received the Joker card.
Oh, yeah.
Stemming it on to the next movie, which I can't even remember what it was. And then it's just like, yeah, but maybe we'll need to call upon him sometime. It's just like, he can beat the darkness. He can find his own destiny. Mm. And then it suddenly cuts back to, because he did a self-sacrifice thing to save this woman he loves. Mm. Literally, the guy who died at the start of the movie goes like, thanks for bringing me back to life, Tom Cruise. Because he has the power over life and death. And Tom Cruise is like, oh, don't worry about it. Don't mention it. Let's ride and find more exotic treasures. And then they ride away. And there's this, the worst visual metaphor of a dark cloud appearing on the horizon. Mm. And then the film ends.
Is Tom Cruise going to be in every film?
No, because they clearly make it that he's going to be like the Robert Downey Jr. of this franchise.
Oh, okay. He's only going to come in when he needs to introduce new things, right?
Because he's off in the desert wearing robes and looking like Master Chief in that Halo 4 commercial.
How much of this kind of heavy-handed connecting there'll be in the new Spider-Man movie, shall we?
Well, less so, I think.
Yeah, I hope so. I got my fingers crossed. The marketing has said otherwise, but I have heard a couple of things.
Hey,
it's actually,
man,
not as heavy-handed as it would appear in the trailer or in the posters.
It's not got the fucking Uncle Ben origin stories
right?
From the looks of things. Like, they've kind of come out
and said
that...
Well, we don't need to explain that again.
No, and like, so. I'm totally fine with that. Like, if they go out of their way to go, okay, cool, he's Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Done. Tell a different story.
It's got Iron Man, the Avengers Tower, and Spider-Man on it.
Yeah.
And I think this is how they're trying to sell the film, but as long as the film doesn't actually have too much of that and it succeeds on its own merits, I think it should
be good. Curious to see. I don't think it will, for just from like quite following that film quite closely when it was announced, because I was very interested in the idea of a Spider-Man movie that didn't need to tell me the origin.
Yeah, sure.
They've talked in length about them not needing to tell that story and stuff, and that's all great. Though it's still Sony, it's not a Marvel Pictures thing, even though they've had some influence on it.
No. But Sony are really using that Marvel connection to promote it.
Of course they are.
Yeah,
I mean, you know,
there's business sense, isn't it?
If you have Robert Downey Jr. in your movie as Iron Man, why not? Yeah. I mean, he's very rarely in the Avengers movies these days. Mm-hmm. Why not have him take young Spider-Man under his wing and launch this thing?
As
if
they do it in a way
franchise
that makes sense and doesn't feel forced, then should be okay. I've heard that Tom Holland's very good as Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And he sort of holds it all together because of his innocence, and the way he portrays Peter Parker is how I think a lot of people have been wanting Peter Parker to appear in a Spider-Man film.
I mean, I liked him in that, in the Civil War. I think his quips and stuff and that whole him landing on the bus.
He seemed to fit the Spider-Man character well, didn't he?
Yeah, and I'm not the biggest fan of Peter Parker. I've probably mentioned it on Tom Matt Attack before.
Yeah.
I give no shits about Peter Parker. He's never been my kind of superhero. Mm. And even playing The Amazing Spider-Man for Gelicense, there are Spider-Man quips, and I'm like, oh yeah, this is why I don't like Peter Parker. Because everyone who writes Peter Parker thinks Peter Parker has to be like, ba-ba-ba-bow! One-liner, yeah, pun!
Well, I don't know if... It still looks like there's going to be plenty of that.
But it seems controlled, it seems quite balanced, and it seems... Yeah. Closer to perhaps to what Stanley's original vision of the character was, that he was a dorky guy and that he does make bad puns and he shouldn't be absolutely hilarious.
He's
not
Deadpool,
is he? No. And I'm kind of okay with that. I do prefer Miles Morales, and from the looks of things, he's going to be in that universe somehow, at least alluded to by the PS4 game, but we'll see.
Let's see. I don't know if the PS4 game's connected to the movie, though, at all.
It's in the same universe, though, right?
Is it? I thought it was its own... thing.
Or maybe I've gone about it all wrong then, to be honest.
I think that is its own thing.
Okay.
Apart from the movie.
If that's its own universe as well, that would be super cool. Yeah. I would be totally fine with that. I thought it was a bit odd that it wasn't releasing alongside this, but I thought maybe it was one of those like cross-transmedia things where it was like, hey, this is the story that prequels the second one or whatever. Okay, that's interesting to know. Mm.
The thing I think we're trying to say in this, isn't it? Just a film should be a good film on its own. And this universe thing is becoming becoming overused, and every franchise feels it's got to have it now. Even Godzilla, you saw the new Godzilla, didn't you?
I saw the new Godzilla. I did not see the new.
King Kong. That's what I mean.
Which is what you're talking about. Yeah.
So King Kong has an after credit sequence where there's this group of people who know all about all these different monsters. And it's organized, secret organization. It's always a secret organization, isn't it?
Have any of them got a Cockney accent?
Shield, you've got the monster hunter thing that you mentioned in The Mummy, and then you've got these other monster scientists.
Yeah, and you've got Bruce Wayne in DC.
Yeah, Bruce Wayne is it. Isn't everything somehow revolves around Bruce Wayne.
It's because he's Batman.
And he's probably the most popular one.
Yeah, exactly. He's the one that needs to be there in every
movie.
He's
he's the Iron Man, isn't he, of the universe.
Oh, God. Like, 10 years ago, you never said that.
Iron Man.
You would have said, he's the Wolverine, or he's the Spider-Man.
Spider-Man, yeah, when you think of Marvel, it's X-Men, Spider-Man.
Yeah, it's so interesting how like these movies have completely changed everyone's expectations of what a Marvel movie is.
Well, maybe it's a Captain America, actually. I forget about Captain America. I mean, but
he's in those movies, but he was never like the main one in the comics either. I mean, he was the head Avenger, but the Avengers were like some weird side story that only your dad read anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's Fantastic Four were more of a thing than the Avengers to me growing up.
Have you heard that Fox have got so many more movies lined up, like six or so superhero movies lined up? And some of them are going to be X-Men movies, Deadpool movies, and probably another Fantastic Four movie. But there's like so many for the next few years that they've got.
Kind of okay with that. Quite a lot. I like the X-Men movies.
See where they go now after the.
Have they said are they going to reboot it after Logan? Or
I think they'll continue it, but make it make sense.
Yeah, but I mean, like Wolverine's not in it anymore because he's dead.
They won't have Wolverine.
Yeah, but.
Which is crazy to
think. I say this in the nicest possible way, but they keep trying to like get rid of Iron Man in the Avengers and it never quite works, does it?
Let's see. That's very intriguing where they'll take that next. Another take on the Fantastic Four. They're still holding on to that license. Someone's got to do it well.
Yeah. Perhaps this is the last hurrah for that license, though. I think they need to either do it now and nail it, or they'll probably do a Sony and concede and give it back to Marvel in some capacity, I reckon.
Yeah, not but Fox seem to have a very tight grip on their Marvel characters.
I mean, it's understandable. I mean, if you have licenses in that cinematic universe. Yeah. And I mean, you then control characters like Doctor Doom and other big things like the Skrulls. You couldn't really do a Secret War Marvel movie through that.
What do you think Doctor Strange? Was that kind of
Strange is a Fantastic Four character, but I think he's also enough of an Avenger where they kind of got away with it.
But the actual movie, Doctor Strange, didn't rely too much on
I think
bigger...
it was a pretty good standalone
that was, that
movie.
That was pretty good. I wouldn't say it's as good as Wonder Woman, but actually it was pretty good.
I quite liked it. They were almost taking it in a different direction. They almost made a Matrix movie with that. I liked some bits of it.
It had its own unique strength, didn't it? It wasn't like all the other superhero films.
I mean, it was the Matrix meets Inception, and that's all good. And with some mysticism thrown in for good measure.
Well.
Yeah. But cinematic universes, give them a rest.
Give them a rest. Let's just have like, some good films.
Just make some good films.
Don't try and tie them into a bigger thing. It doesn't usually work out very well. Unless you do it in a subtle way that doesn't affect the core story.
No, I mean, like, but the thing is that they seem to be missing is the idea of, like, a cinematic universe, right? Can just be a series of really good films.
Yes, you exactly.
You know, you could just make, like, Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz are considered a cinematic universe. They have no connection. They're just two good films. I mean, At World's End is also in there, and for me, that is the weaker of the three. Mm. It's got some great moments. Fuck Off, You Big Lamp is still one of my favourite jokes in any film. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you know, you can have consistent storytelling. You could make Marvel films that didn't have to build up to this thing. The only reason Marvel films do it is because that's been a tradition in comic books. Mm. That was a thing that has always existed. Every year they have a huge Marvel event. And even in comic books, it's why I stopped collecting comic books. It was because you would need to buy
all
17 issues a month to feed into this one bigger story. Yeah. And it got too much and it almost killed the comic book industry. It's why comic sales are still declining. It's because they keep doing like four or five of these a year now instead of the one. It's interesting. It'll be very interesting to see how it goes. I mean, we had a chat in the car the other day on the way to work. And I was like, what, your average cinema goer goes once a month? And like, the guys in the car were like, no, probably like once a year, maybe twice a year. And I mean, that's for these big marquee titles. I mean, Transformers did incredibly well, which makes me very sad.
The new one's done really well, too.
Yeah, made like 156 million or whatever opening weekend. Like, crushed it, as it always seems to, because people love them transforming robots.
You know, Revenge of the Fallen was terrible, and that put me off the franchise. There you go. How about that?
Hey, Tom.
Any sane person would stop watching them then. The first one was all right. Entertaining.
Yeah, the first one was all right.
Yeah.
The second one I saw twice in the cinema because I convinced myself that it was a good film.
The third
movie, I got very close to walking out of, but the only reason I didn't was because the guy who I was in the cinema with was the guy giving me a lift home, so we ripped the piss out of it.
I've heard the third one is One of the better ones.
No, the third one is absolutely... Really? The third one is a garbage can on fire.
I heard an opinion it's quite good up to a point, but then it just falls off totally with like an hour-long action sequence, which you lose
film
any kind of interest in whatever.
I actively remember going, "Oh my fucking God!" in a cinema out loud and getting shushed because it was so dumb. I'm not a person to shit
Does
on films.
Does it start off okay, though? That's why I heard it starts off reasonably well.
Meh.
Okay. Then I heard the rest is trash, but...
It is an awful film. The fourth one is about on par with how bad it is, and I have no interest in seeing the fifth. I only saw the fourth because I was invited by a friend of ours, a mutual work colleague, who had invited me for like a lads' night because they were turning up the sound to 11. And
what are they about now, Transform Them? Because the first one was about them secretly coming to Earth, wasn't it? You know, so they had to disguise themselves as cars and stuff. And that idea, apparently Steven Spielberg's idea of you, it's got to be about a boy in his car.
Yeah.
You know, so you can kind of, you can latch onto something at least with the first one. But then what happens then? I don't kind of understand it all.
It
you
is.
Know. I understood what happened in the first one.
Yeah.
And I don't know where it's
going. What we talked about. It is literally, you know, when you were a kid and you would play with toys when you wouldn't kind of understand the value and what playing was, and you just smash the toys together.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it?
That is what the Transformers films are.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's literally it. There is no substance. There is nothing to be gleaned. They tried with the fourth one by introducing Mark Wahlberg to try and take it back to that.
He's some sort of inventor.
Yeah, he is, but he's kind of a screw up. They tried to torture genius, tried to like bring it back to the kind of boy in his car.
Does he manage to do that? Is he cast right as that type of character?
I think he's okay in it. Like, I don't think he's bad.
He's a good actor, but the kind of inventor, Mark Wahlberg.
He works kind of well. Like, he's not too bad at it.
Okay.
He's not a great inventor, don't get me wrong. He's a screw up. He's one of these. You know, he's got confidence in his ability to invent.
You can believe him in that role, though.
But you could believe him as someone so clueless as to not see that he's not very good at what he's doing. It's not a good film. Okay. Michael Bay gets in his own way, I think, with that movie. And it's
Well, maybe what's next for Transformers is a total reboot.
Well, apparently, no. They've announced they're making another three. Oh. And Michael Bay and Mark Wahlberg are going to have nothing to do with them because I think this is where it starts going like Jason X.
Let's have it straight to video and be done with it.
Yeah, it's going to happen sooner or later. That's how it goes. Any final thoughts?
I think we've... I don't know what to say anymore.
No?
No.
It's all right. Two podcasts in a row is a bit much. Cinematic universes. Sort them out. Make consistent stories. Not that anyone's ever going to listen to this podcast with actually any industry experience to go, you know what? Those boys on that podcast are right. We should stop trying to make these multi-billion dollar industry
You can have a cinematic universe without having to tie everything together.
Make good films.
Just make a good film and have it exist in the same world. It doesn't have to connect itself to that other film.
Understand that people don't set out to make a bad film. I understand that.
Yeah,
there are
They lose sight of
people.
A film should tell a story that should have a beginning, middle, and end. There you go.
Exactly. It should be a self-contained thing. It is an hour and a half or 2 hours. It is very limiting the kinds of stories you can tell in that hour and a half. Make them consistent. Make them narratively make sense. Make sure there is
a
clear three-act
structure. Make them about one
character,
maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, have it focused on one character. Or two, you know what I mean? A lot of these films have loads of, since the Avengers, I guess they're all in there. And it's sort of like Street Fighter the movie.
Yeah. Hey, man, like...
That's why you can't make a good film out of a fighting game.
I mean, that's why the original X-Men films are so ropey, is because they try to cram in too many things. Keep it simple, keep it straightforward. You don't need to see everything. Easter eggs should be Easter eggs. Fan service should be fan service. Doesn't mean you have to throw the whole kit and caboodle at absolutely everything. Mm. And on that note, we'll wrap up this podcast. This was completely unintentional. We just started talking about this off the air after we turned off from the last podcast. And I said, no, let's record it.
Yeah.
Hope people enjoy it. If you do, maybe we'll talk about films some more at some point when we're filling gaps.
Tom Matt on film. I don't know. Come up with a
I'll come
name.
Up with something. It won't be in this podcast. Isn't that like a trope of podcasts and like new podcasts of them going, we don't know what we're going to call it yet?
Oh, yeah.
I don't think we knew what we were going to call Tom and Matt Attack, right? I think that all just kind of
came up with that pretty quick.
I came up with it pretty quick, but I don't think we mentioned it on the podcast. Anyway, this isn't going to be a new thing. This is a spin-off for now. We'll see.
Tell us if you like.
Unless people are like, oh my God, those two gents talking about film.
Oh my God, they can talk about film.
God, his explanation.
Give them a TV show.
Good God, his explanation of The Mummy was absolutely fantastic. Okay, thank you, Sean. And thank you, Tom. I'm going to go, because my voice is now in tatters, as I mentioned on the last podcast. Yeah. I have a bit of a tickly throat anyway, and now I've been very excited about Tom Cruise.
I need a wee.
Cool. Anyway, you know where to find us, TMAcast, tommattack.com/podcast, etc., etc. Till then, game on.
Ta-ta.
No, we can't end it like that. It's not about games. Shit. No,
that's what I said.
Ta-ta.
Cut.
Cut.